Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. If you've been following marketing for any reasonable length of time, you'll understand that personal branding is undergoing a renaissance. It's been around for a long time, but now more and more people are understanding the power of creating a personal brand that allows you to go from being an expert to an influencer. And our conversation today with Jane Anderson from jane-anderson.com really covers that in detail. First of all, we talk about what personal branding actually is and why it's so important in today's world. She gives us some practical steps about how to create a personal brand and, of course, how to transition from that expert dentist to being an influencer in the space. We talk about how to scale a practice while still maintaining a personal brand. And, of course, we're going to go through a couple of the key mistakes and boo-boos that people make. It's a really wide-ranging interview. We do cover a lot of territory. We talk about trust, amongst other things, the importance of building it, maintaining it, and, if necessary, repairing it as well. Jane is an absolute gem when it comes to talking about all these things because it's not fluff. It's not academia. This is real-world stuff that she does in her business every single day and what she helps her clients achieve as well. So, as always, you're going to want to have a pen and a paper handy and make some notes so you can take action on the things that she goes through. I'm going to encourage you to check out her website, jane-anderson.com. There's so many good things on that particular website. And in the show notes, you'll see a link where you can take a test, a little quiz, to check out what kind of influencer you might be in your space already. For those who are new to the show, please come across, find us at the Savvy Dentist Facebook group. Head across to drjessegreen.com/Facebook. Join us in the group. We've got free training, we've got tools, techniques, cheat sheets, and so on, and you'll be able to take advantage of those things there. So come and join the conversation. We'd love to see you there. But in the meantime, here's Jane Anderson. Jane Anderson, welcome to our Savvy Dentist podcast. It's wonderful to have you here. How's things up in Brizzy?
Thank you. Thanks, Jesse. It's my absolute pleasure to come on the show today. It's good in Brizzy. I won't rub it in too much that I'm sitting here in my T-shirt and, you know, it's nice and warm today and I'm going to head off to the beach this afternoon to do some mastermind work over the next couple of days.
Well, the masterminds at the beach sounds fantastic. This morning I was driving around Canberra and it was 10.5 degrees on the dashboard and I was feeling hot. So I feel like that's probably nothing that a Queenslander would ever say. So I'm getting acclimatized.
You've acclimatized well and truly, I reckon.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Jane, you are really, really well known in your space, particularly around personal branding and becoming an influencer. And I wanted to have a bit of a conversation with you around that because it seems to me that personal branding and becoming an influencer is something that is getting a lot of attention in the media these days. And you've, of course, been doing this for a long, long time. So before we do get into the nuts and bolts of it, I'm wondering, for the audience listening who might not be familiar with what actually personal branding is, could you just explain what it is we're talking about?
Yeah, so personal branding has been defined and quoted by so many people. So Tom Peters was the first person to define this term called personal brand back in 1997. So I was in second year uni, so no guesses for my age. So he was the first person to coin the term in Fast Company magazine, saying that your personal brand is your promise to the marketplace and to the world. And so it's kind of like, what is it that is your, what would say, your brand promise, or is it, what is it that you're known for? And then if you look at, say, someone like Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, who says that your personal brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room. So in my opinion, I reckon your personal brand, what I look for when I'm helping someone build a personal brand is I work with people who are experts in their field. So people who are often speakers, coaches, consultants, do a lot with medical, CEOs, sometimes rainmakers of organisations. So they might be executives or people in the executive team or key influencers. And I say that I reckon your personal brand is not so much. I mean, you can be a subject matter expert, but I say that you're, instead of knowing something, you're known for knowing something.
Yeah, so there's the whole expert that's unknown, but now you're becoming known as the expert that you already are.
Yeah. and regardless of the industry you're in. So it's not about making someone like the next Kim Kardashian. This is not about fame. This is not about you walking through airports and being asked for autographs and photos and things like that. Like that's not the game that we're playing, and we're not necessarily looking for, you know, for you to have 2 million followers on Instagram or anything like that. It's actually that you're known, respected and trusted for the expertise that you have, and people listen to what you have to say. And when you have something to say, or you have something that you want to be able to create change in your industry, that you're able to do that because you have the likability, you're trusted and respected for it.
So why is it you think personal branding is going through such an upswing at the moment? Because it is getting a lot of attention. Why is it so important these days to build a personal brand? Because there'll be dentists listening to this podcast going, isn't it the practice brand? Isn't it about the practice and not about me? And I'm just a kind of doing my thing as a dentist. Why is it important for each of us to kind of be known as the expert that we are?
Yeah, so I think there's a few reasons. One is that it's particularly since sort of around 2012, things started to change. It was when I really noticed the change. So by 2020, we've got around 50% of the workforce due to be self-employed. So there's a lot of people who are also underemployed. So when we say underemployed, people who want full-time work but they're only getting part-time. So they've had to work out a way to be able to market themselves. So since GFC, organisations are much leaner. They don't necessarily have as many people working for them. They don't have the fat in the budgets to carry people. So how I sort of started with this in Queensland in 2012, we had a change of government and around 17,000 people were made redundant, and I had about 80% of my business coming from public, working with public service and helping people to build their capability and to be able to work with executive teams and build their communication and things like that. And so my business went overnight. And so since then, when you've got a massive upswing of people in the market and there's not the jobs there, then it creates competition. And so then we have to say, okay, well, how do you position and market yourself to be able to get those jobs? So one was the shift from full-time work to underemployment or sometimes even contractors. So organisations that started to say, well, we want to put people on, but we're more project-based now. We're much leaner, so we need to bring in people who are more experts. Let's come in and just do this project and then they can go. We don't have to carry this person forever. There was one significant thing that has happened, which is obviously social media. So the way social media works is it's social platforms and people buy from people. So it's not just necessarily about saying, okay, well, I need a dentist, so I'm going to Google it. I'm going to put it on Facebook. I'm going to say, I need a dentist. Does anyone know a good dentist in blah? And I'm going to start relying on what other people have to say. As a business owner, you now can start getting your business in front of people in your local area. Like, you've got the marketing and advertising, and everybody knows that that's a little bit different now, but because of the social aspect of it and the personality, I'm buying a person as opposed to a business. So business is still a big part of it, but one of the most untapped part of growing a business is tapping into the personal brand of the expert who works there.
Yeah, and again, I think there's so much crossover from general business to dental practice in this, because there'll be different people in the practice known for different things. And I guess what I wanted to ask you around that is, one of the things that we talk about in the work that we do is helping dentists scale their practice so they create leverage and so on. Creating a personal brand, how do you actually try and leverage that? Because that sounds like it's going to be a challenge. Or is it a case in that situation where, you know, let's say you've got a practice, a principal who's got a really strong personal brand, but they've only got two hands and 24 hours in a day. How do you create leverage? Is it a matter of building a brand around other people in the business, or is it a matter of building a practice brand?
Yeah, you want a balance of the two. So if you've got it too heavily focused on the person who is the owner, what you need to do is look at how do you bring in the other personal brands of the people in your business that form part of that communication. So, for example, let's say you have maybe it's a dental nurse or some of the support team. So rather than you being the person who's in all the communication, like maybe you're doing your videos and maybe you're writing your blogs and all that sort of stuff, but every now and again is don't make it all about you. Tap into the people. So you might say, okay, today I want to introduce you to Sarah. She's our dental nurse who some of you will already know. Sarah, tell us a bit about you and what do you find is the greatest challenge that some of our patients have? And, you know, we've got some that are a bit scared about needles. And so tell us about what do you do to help people feel a little bit more comfortable? So then they start to feel like, oh, okay, well, if I can't get to see Dr. X, then okay, but I'm familiar with someone. I'm familiar with Sarah, so I'll trust Sarah as well. So you're spot on. Is how do you start to amplify the other people in the practice that you need to build trust with as well? So for example, even myself, when I speak at conferences, when I'm running programs, I often bring my team with me. So I have two support team of project managers and my EA. I bring them with me because it means that even though I'm doing all the content and the blogging, they're seen as part of the team, and that relieves a lot of pressure.
Yeah, fantastic. Again, I think that's really wise. So for people listening, if you want to scale your business, maybe it's about turning the spotlight onto other people and letting them shine a little as well. So if you've just joined our podcast, we are having a conversation with Jane Anderson, and you can find her at jane-anderson.com. And we're talking all about personal branding. And Jane, one of the words that has come up in our conversation a few times already is the word trust. And I know that you're in the process of having a book released around the concept and subject of trust in December this year. Why does trust carry such currency, and how does it interface with personal branding?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that when you're stepping into your personal brand, what you're really doing is stepping into your personal power. I know that sounds maybe a bit woo-woo, but it's not just about, okay, well, I'm going to create this personal brand, and it's not about formula. It's not formulaic or constructing this entity, and you can go, great, there's my personal brand. I can go over here and be now be myself. Like, it's actually one and the same. But to do that, you have to be so authentic and so committed to making a difference for your patients that you are really stepping into a higher purpose about why you're here on this planet and what you're here to do and make the difference. So if you want to create a change, so maybe it's around educating patients to help them understand, you know, maybe that why they need certain treatments, or sharing case studies of particular patients and things that they've gone through, is that if you want to create that change, and you've got to communicate that change, which is around influence or change around what's the message you're trying to stand for, which may be excellence or maybe world class or maybe innovation or whatever it might be in your practice. I've got to communicate that, but then that's all well and good, but you've got to keep people connected, and it's all related to patient retention. So it's all very good and well to get new people coming in, so they're going, oh, wow, these people seem quite good. But then you have to shift over into, okay, we've got to make sure we've got the trust to keep them coming back, because patients aren't necessarily, and I'm sure your clients find this, is that they're not necessarily that loyal. They're being bombarded by so many messages. The average person's on social media for 2 hours a day. They're not sitting watching television as much as they used to be. So your patients are so much more accessible than they've ever been before. So it's really easy for me to come in and start to try and pull patients off you. So the only thing that will keep them is that level of trust that I know you know me. You've got my history. I know that you will advocate for me. I know that you have my best interests at heart, and I can share with you my challenges. Like, my health is such a vulnerable thing to share. So you have to also be able to show your vulnerability, or to be able to say, you know, I understand. I remember when I was younger, or I know when I've had this experience too. So if you can connect at that human level, you're far more likely to retain them. And that's all about trust, because you've got drugs, you've got needles, you've got drills. So that, you know, that takes a lot of trust to trust people with, when you've got that level of control over me. I might not even be conscious with work that you're maybe doing on me. So I don't have control of what you're doing, and that's quite scary. So I have to be able to trust you enough that you're going to look after me.
How do you view trust? And we understand trust as a currency, and we had a bit of a conversation just before we started about institutional trust is at a bit of an all-time low. So how do you consciously build trust? What are the steps that one might take to, you know what, if I'm thinking about my personal brand and I want to be perceived as being trustworthy, and obviously I need to earn it, but and I need to commit to it. But how do I go about building trust? How do I go about creating that in the mind and experiences of the people with whom I interact?
Yeah, and in the book I'm going to write about nine. I won't go through all nine, but I'll go through the high level three. In my experience, the three that I've found that have been the big hitters to build trust, number one is authenticity. You have got to just be real. You just got to be who you are at your best self. Have a strong sense of identity. You can have a personality. If you don't have a personality, then you might have to go and get one. I don't know where you get one, but
eBay.
Yeah, they might be selling them on there. Actually, that would be funny. But you just don't be afraid to bring your sense of personality and authenticity into it. So when I say that, it can be things like what's your favorite music? Like tell us a bit about your family. Are you involved in the community? Like what are some of the parts of your world? Maybe you weren't born in Australia. You know, what's your background? Where were you born? What's your story? So authenticity is a really, really key part and the foundation of everything. The second thing is empathy. And empathy is that real understanding, compassion for your patients. And so you understand my fear of how much is this going to cost me? My fear of, you know, we all know what it's like with dentists. You kind of put off going, and then there's that relief of once you've gone, like, it's, thank God it's off my plate. But if you can get the authenticity, I'm going to get some connection with you because the empathy beside that means that you understand how I'm feeling. You understand my pain, my frustration, or what's holding me back from coming in because I'm scared that I'm embarrassed because I haven't been to the dentist for the last 10 years or, you know, things like that. Then the third one is credibility. So credibility is you obviously have the expertise, you have the knowledge, you've done the study, those types of things. And I think what happens too much is there's sometimes a little bit too much emphasis on the study or all the expertise that you've got. I go, that's great. Most of the time we look at it and go, I don't even know what half those letters mean. But it's also around the reputation that you have in your colleagues. So, you know, referrals and things like that. But credibility, that you actually know how to do your job. You haven't been deregistered. So, you know, if I Google your name, do you turn up in any search results where people are saying definitely do not go to this person? But if you can get those three things right, authenticity, empathy and credibility, then you're going to be able to be really well positioned to build trust.
Yeah, and I remember hearing someone talk about the Stephen Covey principle, which was, you know, the relationship bank account and the trust bank account in a similar way, is that, you know, from time to time things do happen. We are all human, we're all fallible. And so from time to time, things do happen. But if you've made enough deposits into your trust bank account with the patient or the client or with whoever else it is you're interacting, when something does go awry, then you're not going to go into the red.
That's spot on. Absolutely. It's keep putting those credits in. The thing is, though, is that with the volume of noise that's happening, like with how much we have to compete with, you know, at the moment it used to take 5 to 7 touch points to get someone to change their behaviour. So I can see that book on your shelf, Charles Jennings' Persuasion. So his first book on persuasion, Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion, said it was 5 to 7 touch points. At the moment, we work off 10 with our clients. We expect in the next sort of 2 to 3 years, it'll be around 16 to 20 touch points. So the push is much harder. So that means a lot more pressure to put content out or to be communicating with your customers or patients, I should say, which are essentially the deposits. So every time you're communicating with your patient, so whether it's through your update on newsletters, whether they're following your social media and you're doing videos, is every one of those is a deposit and they're more likely to stay with you.
Yeah, 10 touch points is still a fair bit at the moment. To go to 16 and then who knows, in another 15 years it might be, you know, 2025, it just gets longer and longer. And I guess that kind of speaks to the fact that it is becoming a noisy marketplace. And certainly dentistry has become very competitive. We've seen tons and tons of dentists. There's almost one on every corner. You've got big corporations, you've got health insurance companies. It's a really crowded marketplace. What I wanted to talk about then is the power of small. And I think there's some magic in that. And I wondered if you had a view.
Yeah, absolutely. So the beauty of small, and when you say the power of small is extraordinary, because it means that you can create an even deeper personal connection. And so just to give you an idea, so I do large organizational strategy as well. So I'll go in and do social media strategy and how, like, say, the CEO and the GMs might work together. But I'll only typically do that work with an organization of under 1,000 people. So I won't do it with, they might be global multinationals, but I might just work with a unit that's around 1,000 people or something like that. And even in that size organization, it can still feel a little bit commoditized. But if you are, you know, I really believe in the power of the individual, in that you can create so much more connection because you can create the human connection. To give you an example, one of the things that I've done with some of my clients is we do lots of personal video for client retention. So it'll be things like, "Hi, Sarah," and we'll just throw the video on. "I've been thinking about what you were talking about last week. And so what I wanted to say was blah, blah, blah. I think we need to really think about X, Y, Z," and communicating that. And people go, "Oh, my God, you're using my name in a video. Did I just hear that?" So, so the power of being able to create human communication, and really, that's so powerful, and that's something that large businesses just can't do.
Yeah, and I think for some of the dentists listening to the show, they tend to get a bit worried about the corporates or the health funds or the health insurance companies and so on. And I get that. I'm not saying nothing to see, move along. So I'm always mindful of that. But I also think that there are some inherent advantages to being a little bit smaller, being able to have that personal connection. And I remember hearing a great quote, I think it was Brené Brown, who says, "Connection is what gives meaning and purpose to our lives." And so being able to establish that, create that trust, create that relationship, create the loyalty, create the retention piece, then I think obviously that works really well. I do just want to circle back to personal branding for a second, because I know trust is going to be an integral part of that. But what I wanted to just talk about for a moment is, there'll be someone listening to this show going, "Okay, I understand I've got to have the three elements around trust. I also know that it's important for me to build a personal brand so I can market myself and be engaging and attractive to the marketplace." What are the things from a practical perspective that go into creating a personal brand, a good personal brand, I should qualify?
Yeah, not one that you've picked off the shelf and went, "Great, I'm going to be that person." What I've found is that most people are a little bit close to their own stuff. So we find it hard to build our own personal brand because we don't necessarily sometimes see the value of some of the things that are part of our brand to bring to life. So sometimes it's getting, I mean, I even don't do my own personal brand. I have to work with other people who are experts at pulling that out of me because we're too close. So the first thing I would say is you need to be able to do the whole Johari window and get into don't know what you don't know. And then the other thing is, then once you can work that out, is then you've got to be able to communicate that, because then the first part is, well, what is it that, what's the value that I bring? And now I have to communicate that value. And so I created the book called Expert to Influencer, which is essentially 12 skills to help you to identify how to communicate that value. And the 12 skills are split into four quadrants. And it's essentially, one quadrant is you've got people who already know you and know what they want. So your job is to be really proactive with those people. And that means personal reaching out, making sure that you're following up people. Have they booked in for their 6-month rebookings and things like that? Then you've got those people out there who don't know you, but they know what they're after. And so if you think about this quadrant, this is about Google searches. This is how making sure that people can find you. My experience has been there's often a little bit too much emphasis on this, and that's what creates the commoditization and competing on price. So there is a part, but I actually spend more time on that later with clients. I tend to do a lot of the other work on the other quadrant. So there's direct contact, so reaching out with those you've already got. You've got being found. The other one is building awareness. So that's where you're out, where there are people out there who have no idea who you are and have no idea that they need to come to see a dentist. Like, they're just putting up with the pain, or they're avoiding it for whatever reason. So your job is to make sure that awareness is being built, getting in front of people where they realize that they may not know they need help and they're not actively looking for it, but they actually need it. And so in that case, how do you get in front of that? Your job is to go out and build awareness with those people. So that's sometimes through advertising, it's like PR, things like that. And then the other quadrant is there are people out there who know you, but they haven't got the insight just yet to see, that's why I need to come and see you. And so our responsibility there in that quadrant is to educate. So there's a great guy that I follow on Instagram, actually, is called The Foot Mechanic, and he does some fantastic case studies. So I coach a lot of doctors, so I'm often sort of following medical people and how they unpack their expertise and knowledge. And he makes it super accessible, and he tells a lot of patient stories. He never puts their faces or anything. But the things that he shares are really quite interesting, sometimes a little bit graphic. But
There's only so many plant warts you can see in a day, isn't
it? Yeah, and ingrown toenails and things. But but it's quite interesting. So, you know, you look at some of his elderly patients, and there was one lady I remember who had been wearing shoes too small for her. And what was happening to her toes and her feet. Now, reading that, I was going, well, how many other people out there are doing that wouldn't even realize that that's actually what the problem is? They're buying shoes too small. So you know, using that way to go, wow, my mother-in-law has that problem. I should talk to her about that. So, you know, suddenly you're starting to educate your patients, and when you can educate them and teach them, then you're in a position of trust, that's for sure, and influence, and then they're more likely to stay with you.
Yeah, I really love that, and I think what you've drawn out really nicely is, you know, how to unpack the expertise and the value, and then how to communicate that really well, depending on who it is that we're speaking to. Jane, I'm very curious to ask you about some of the things that you see where people go wrong, and you might see them or see their profiles or whatever, and you kind of think, if you could tap them on the shoulder and say, don't don't do that, or stop it right now, please. You're shooting yourself in the foot. What sort of things do you see that people just, well, really candidly, they make a hash of it?
Yes, and I bet you see this all the time. It's the big one for me is sequence of the activity. So, for example, if I might see where I saw someone the other day who I know is fairly early in their business and starting their practice up, and they've started a podcast, and I'm like, oh, wow, there's so much more work to do before you tackle a podcast. I was, you know, trying to do everything and just make it all work, but it wasn't until I got, you know, I went to find someone who could help me, and they pointed out that my sequence was all out. And so now I see it with other people, and I go, oh, wow. So they'll often be doing things like, say, it might be, I work in revenue belt, so it might be someone who's bringing in a revenue of 120 to 200 and then to 300 to 500 to million plus. Then I'll go, oh, that's kind of a $750,000 activity. That's not a 100 to 200,000 activity. So, yeah, so when you sometimes see that some of those types of things, you go, oh, yeah, geez, I would love to see you get a better return on your time. You know, there's only one of you, and now you're not focusing on the patients. You know, that top right-hand quadrant, which is what I talk about in the direct contact, like looking after your customers or the patients that you've already got, like they're already there.
I know.
We're often chasing all these other new ones, and I go, hold on. What about these people? They've been looking after you and your business. What are you doing to look after them?
That is exactly my point as well. I wrote a whole book around patient retention because it used to frustrate me, because I always used to say it's like going out to dinner with your significant other and then checking out the pretty young thing or handsome young thing on the next table, and you've got this wonderful person in front of you. It's just absurd to think that we're constantly chasing more new leads, more new business, when really I think the question I ask most people is, how big would your business be right now if you'd retained every single customer?
Right, great question.
And for most people, there's a bit of a downcast look and go, yeah, okay, fair call.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to ask you is, just coming back to the influencer and becoming trusted and so on and so forth, if we get this right, if we do get this right, what sort of things could people expect? I mean, you've obviously worked with lots of clients, and when they execute the strategy well, what are the things that they experience typically? I know it'll vary from industry to industry, but just generally speaking.
Well, they'll often be referred. They're easily referable because they're doing the work, so they're easy to validate. So they'll be saying, you know, is it quite often someone in the family or other patients, or will be referring them. So the big one is easily referable because they've got the positioning. The second one would be that opportunities come along. So quite often collaborations, or, you know, quite often there's someone who's thinking about working with someone like you that you don't even know about just yet. Yeah, there's opportunities that come along that you may not have even considered, but because you're visible, because you're known, people come along. The other thing is that you're often, your expertise is sought somehow. So it might be in the community. It might be that you're asked to speak, like, for example, it might be you're asked to come and speak at your children's school. And to be able to say, can you tell us a bit about what you're noticing with children's health? Well, this is what we're noticing with their teeth. There's too much sugar in diets. So then suddenly you're in a position of trust. Of course, the school is now going to come to you because you've taken the time to come out and educate us about our kids' health. So opportunities really start to arise. Certainly we talked about patient retention. Yeah, I think that's probably really the main thing. Retention, referrals, and opportunities to get in front of more people.
Yeah, cool. I also just want to ask you, and I know that this is going to sound a little off topic, but I think I want to try and bring it back, is what about reputation management? So you've built this strong personal brand, then something happens. Maybe you've just had a bad day. Maybe you've said something you shouldn't have. Maybe you posted something on social media that was a bit more reactive than responsive. How do you go about trying to repair that?
Yeah. I reckon, you know, we're all only human. Like this, we've all made mistakes, and anyone who has made a mistake knows that that's just what happens. But I always reckon it's not always about what happens, it's about what happens next. So whatever happens next is what will help you to retain or to rebuild that trust. So is it that you acknowledge your mistake? Do you apologize? What if it's a really big error, then is it, what are you going to do to rebuild that? So that's going back to the bank account you're talking about. So do I need to put lots of little deposits in over a long period of time to rebuild all that trust, or is it putting a really big deposit in? Like, what do I need to do? So I think the bank account metaphor is perfect to be able to think, okay, well, I'm now in the red big time. What is it that it's going to take to get that balance back up? And you're always, you know, I say in my book, the first book I wrote called Impact, it talks about your personal brand is about clarity about what you want, communicating the value, and then control. And control is when things go wrong. So your brand shows up most when things go wrong. So in fact, sometimes it's not a bad thing. I know it's really painful at the time if something goes wrong, but I actually say your character shows up most, your authenticity shows up most when something goes wrong. So if you can see it as an opportunity to really tap into your authenticity, it actually is in some ways a little bit of a gift if you can use it the right way.
Yeah, cool. So for everyone listening there, I think there's absolute words of wisdom dripping with gold. So please make sure you copy that down. And in fact, copy everything down, but especially go back about a minute or minute and a half and listen to that last little bit, because everyone has something that doesn't work out. That's, if you stay in business long enough, there is going to be a withdrawal from the trust bank account. And as painful as it is, what Jane has indicated is how to get back on track. And I think it's an important part. Life is not always peaches and cream, so we've got to know how to deal with the other bits as well. Jane, you've been incredibly generous with your time. And I also just want to point out your website has some incredible resources there. You've got your podcast, you've got your blog, you've got a ton of content there. If you were wanting to advise someone, you know, one of the key resources on your website to check out first in terms of getting started in personal branding or indeed learning a bit more about trust, where should we direct people to have a good sticky beak?
Yeah, so I've got a little sneaky spot for your listeners so that they can go and get something I think that would be really useful. So when I wrote it, so this is the Expert to Influencer book. So when I wrote that, I also created a diagnostic to help people measure where they're at in terms of those skills and working out, well, where do I start? Like when I talked about that direct contact versus do I worry about Google and AdWords versus reaching out to people versus educating. So if you go to the homepage, And right down the very bottom in the purple, there's a purple area right down the bottom. And I'll actually give you the link anyway, Jess, so you can put it on your website with your podcast anyway. But there's a little spot there that's called the Influencer Indicator. Now, if you go to the shop, you have to pay $80 for it. But what I've put is just, so it's easy to find, but it's right down the bottom of the page. And it's called the Influencer Indicator. And you can just go in, it takes 3 minutes, and you get a full, it's about 5-6 pages report of exactly what you need to focus on and where next. And that can be just a great place to start to know, well, great, I don't need to waste my time, energy, effort on AdWords. What I need to do is I've scored really low on focusing on my customers and helping them grow or become better. So great. So you don't have to waste time, money, energy, effort on something that you've got right at your fingertips that you could change tomorrow.
Okay, great. So what we'll do, ladies and gents, is we'll put a link in our show notes around that, and that will take you through to Jane's diagnostic there, and that'll give you a really good head start on what to do next. So that'll be fantastic. Jane, you have been incredibly generous, and I want to say thank you, firstly. I've been reading your stuff now for quite a while. It always keeps me on my toes and keeps me sharp. And I learn something every time I come along to your website. So from me to you, I really appreciate all the content you produce. For all our listeners, I'd really encourage you to go and check out jane-anderson.com because, as I said, there's a treasure trove of goodies there that I know you'll just want to get stuck into. So, but start off with that Influencer Indicator. Jane, just as we wrap up, one last little question for you. Of all the people that you admire in terms of the influencer space and building personal brands, who do you really look up to and go, wow, they've really rocked it, they've nailed it, they've got it sorted?
Yeah, pretty hard to beat Seth Godin, I reckon.
Oh, isn't he a star?
He's just a genius. He really is. Like, for someone who's so elegant, articulate, and how he can write, like for anyone else who tries to write maybe content every day that it's spammy, but you just to have that excitement and wanting to open that piece of content that he has to say each day, I just reckon that's so powerful. If you can work out how to replicate that, he's just a genius.
He is a genius. I have to tell you really quickly, some years ago when I was going through a bit of a tough time, I actually emailed Seth and he just sent me a lovely little note of encouragement. And it was honestly.
Wow, really?
Yep. I just was going through a really difficult time and I'd read his blog and I just sent a little paragraph saying, Seth, this is what's happening. And he just wrote back this lovely little message. And I've never forgotten that act of kindness. Had it not been for that little act of kindness, I might not be here talking to you today.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. What an amazing story.
Yeah, it's just those little ripples, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. I've got goosebumps you telling me that.
Yeah.
It's incredible. What a great story.
Well, Jane, thank you once again. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. And we look forward to seeing you around the traps and listening to your podcast as well. So, again, I really appreciate it. And let's catch up again soon.
Yeah, love to. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.